Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning, welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast later, listen at your leisure. This show's all about science in all its different forms. You've got Julian Paul here live. Yes. In the studio as usual this Saturday morning. Later in the show we'll be talking to Phil Muffett, our guest speaker, whenever there are five Saturdays in the month. He's doing an astro clinic. Oh, he's going to be talking about personal journey with his telescope. He could talk for hours about that. And next week, and indeed every first Saturday of the month, all being well, Phil will be back and doing his general eye on the sky chat. We'll also be talking to PG later on in this show. And before I forget, Yorkshire Photographic Unit Exhibition is on at the Danham Gallery Library and Museum in Doncaster. It runs until the 5th of July. It's fantastic. Submissions from clubs all across Yorkshire, including Sheffield Photographic Society, of course, and the Great Cafe too. And before I forget as well, May is National Walking Month. So we're right at 31st of May. I've just got it in before we go into June tomorrow. So just 20 minutes of walking a day can improve symptoms of depression and anxiety. Take advantage of longer days to get your steps in.
And if you do go to the Danham Gallery and try to find the Yorkshire Photographic Unit Exhibition, it is on the top floor.
It is, where the art gallery is.
Yes, tucked away, but yes, it's brilliant. Right, in the science news this week, temperatures in the seas around the UK and Ireland have soared in the past week, with some areas now 4 degrees Celsius warmer than normal, with potential implications for marine life and people going swimming. The marine heat wave has been most intense off the west coast of Ireland, as well as pockets off the coast of Cornwall and Devon, according to scientists at the National Oceanographic Centre and the Met Office. Sea temperatures in April and the first half of May were the highest recorded during those months since monitoring began 45 years ago. Climate change is causing oceans to warm around the globe, and is making marine heat waves, like this one more likely. In 2023, jellyfish sightings increased by 32% following a marine heat wave of temperatures 3 to 4 degrees Celsius above average. The heat could also encourage different fish to move into UK waters, for example, the bluefin tuna. Meanwhile, scientists also expect 2025 to be one of the hottest years on record for air temperatures too.
Ooh, blimey. And after more than 2 years of fighting to maintain the right to wild camp on Dartmoor, a right upheld by the Supreme Court last week, the head of the National Park believes that it should be now extended to more of the UK. Ooh, interesting.
And finally, devised by Harvard scientists, a new artificial intelligence, or AI system, could face age. It's called Face Age, and it can assess your health and even how long you will live from a photograph, eh?
Interesting. What? Quite worrying, actually. Yeah. If you tuned in a few weeks ago, you'd have heard Gareth Morgan talking about the rise of artificial intelligence in photography. And, well, it's rising science as well. You're, of course, listening to Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Before we get in touch with our PG, see what he's going to be talking about, bits and pieces, I believe. I'm going to talk about the Swift. If you've heard them, they're coming back and they're around and about. This article was by Simon Barnes. I thought it's an absolute belter of an article. So this talks about the Swift's journey. Remember, for a Swift, the sky is its home. Yeah. So Monday, journey of the Swift. Africa was great. I stayed there 3 months but didn't touch it once. Didn't perch on a tree or on a rock or on a wire. That's not our way. I stayed in the air the whole time, but after a while the old urge to move north came back, just as it did last year. 3 months in Africa, 3 months in England, and the rest commuting in between. So on Tuesday, this so says the Swift, no sooner do I reach England than the weather caves in, and you can't catch flying insects when the rain's knocking them out of the sky. That might be a problem for some, but not for us Swifts. I took a loop round Germany, ending up at the back of a big weather depression where all the insects were swooshed to, and I fed, slept, and set off back to England. So Wednesday, I don't call England home. The Swift says it calls the sky is home, or their home. Obviously, I sleep on the wing. Nothing to it. Get up nice and high and then doze in circles in the intensities of the sky. Thursday, there it is, the place I was hatched. Not last year, but the year before. It was quite nice to see the place last year, but this year, but this time round, it's rather more compelling. When I took wing from that place 2 years ago, I said goodbye to the ground. Well, forever, really. That was a general idea. Last year, back in England, I was a hooligan, screaming up and down streets with other second summer birds, reaching 70 miles per hour in a straight and level flight. What could be better than that? Well, Friday, I didn't touch England during last year's visit. Just as I didn't touch Africa, I can do 500 miles in a day without stress or strain. It's not as hard as it looks. You don't burn much fuel when you're gliding, and I can glide as easily as I can do high-speed powered flights. Saturday, we mostly fly in flocks, but inside those flocks I've been keeping company with one somewhat special female. We singled each other out a while back. We've tested each other in races, both screaming at the tops of our voices. So now when you hear Swifts, you know what they're up to. Now I know where it's all leading. When we Swifts make love, we do it on the wing. How else would anybody do it? We do it screaming through the air, and my time is coming very, very soon. Then we will have to come out of the sky to make a nest, and we'll raise young. And before August is upon us, they will escape the clutches of the ground and fly all the way home to the sky. So that was a story about the Swift, as told to Simon Barnes. Great article. And remember, Swifts call the sky home.
I'm looking at the big sky now. I'm looking at the
Cracking track there by Kate Bush, of course, because we're talking about the journey of the Swifts, as an article by Simon Barnes. Great stuff. You're of course listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. RPG should be on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning. Morning.
Good morning. I've managed to plug you in again. I'm getting good at that now. Brilliant. So what's caught your eye in the science news this week then, Paul?
Well, I thought we'd perhaps start off with a bit about birds and bees, eh?
Wow.
So we're just talking about the Swift, but an article I read about solar farms, and according to the survey that they did on the solar farms, it's boosting bird diversity. So they've spotted 94 types of bird on solar farms, and looked on 124 British solar farms and found they were collectively home to about 7,500 birds of 94 types, a fifth of which were on the endangered or red list species, such as nightingales, skylarks, and yellowhammers. There were also around 3,000 butterflies and bumblebees recorded on the sites from 29 different species, and 44 tree species, 314 plant species were recorded, and that's from research by the Solar Energy UK, in collaboration with the University of Lancaster. So ecological consultancies, Witchwood Biodiversity. And 3 years ago, we knew anecdotally that solar farms were good for wildlife, but the evidence is now strong after this recent study. So, more than 50% of the sites are seeing the appearance of these red-listed birds. So sounds like a good move for the bird population, that solar farms are giving that kind of...
It's a win-win, isn't it? Because we're getting power from a sustainable source.
Green energy, and the birds are getting obviously somewhere that they don't mind living.
Yeah, it was a bad year for birds, for bumblebees and things last year because it was so wet.
Yes, it's. I think it's very difficult, as the Swift said. You know, I think some of the heavy rain can play havoc with the bird, with insect populations.
Yeah.
So, which kind of brings me to a second thing, and that's something that happened on Friday in Washington State in America. An estimated 250 million bees escaped from an overturned truck. So that sparked warnings by the authorities for the public to avoid the swarms, and emergency officials were helped by several master beekeepers. The truck had been hauling roughly 70,000 pounds of active honeybee hives, and it flipped over on a road near the Canadian border.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, so the goal is now to save as many bees as possible, and the authorities said the site of the crash would remain closed until the rescue's complete. So they're working away trying to save as many of the 250 million bees as they can. So it's amazing. You use transport to shift the bees around, and you put them at risk.
And why? Yeah, are they spreading them around to just share the love, as it were? And get them spread around, and to get them spreading further across the country, maybe.
That happens in lots of countries. They actually move the hives from one position to another to pollinate So quite often you'll find hives are moved into orchards in the UK, especially sort of commercial orchards, to pollinate the fruit trees.
Yeah.
So they do that on a very large scale in a country like the States, where they've got a pretty big agricultural sector. But really the same, some of the beekeepers aim only to produce honey, but others rent out their hives to farmers for the insects to pollinate their crops.
Fascinating stuff, eh?
Yeah,
it's the good old bee.
Sort of find out those kind of things, and it's very good.
Well, we've got a lot of jasmine in our garden, and it can be difficult to control because it can get quite leggy. But if you keep it trimmed, as we have done, we've got quite a lot of it. The flower, the bees love it. Our jasmine is absolutely swarming with bees. They're overdosing on the pollen. So if anybody's out there wanting to be bee friendly, I can highly recommend jasmine.
Yep. Well, we've got a mock orange, which is now they're kind of falling out with it. But when it was first in flower, it's beautifully scented.
Oh, it is.
And that really sort of attracted the bees. But we noticed we've got a very small patch of chives which flowered, and the bees absolutely loved that. The rosemary's flowered, and the bees loved that. So the change the menu.
They have what they like. They do like lavender. I once moved. We had a pot of lavender outside the back door, and the bees all came to it, and I moved it, and they carried on coming to the same place as if to say, "What? Where's it gone? Where's it gone?"
It's incredible. I guess the other thing that I noticed in my garden is how different plants have fared. I think the side of my house is facing over to the west and tracks the sun from early on through to late afternoon on that side. And I've got a little herb planter, which has got some oregano on top, which has done really well. Then I got two different types of thyme, one of which is sort of badly dried out, but it's got green shoots on it, and the other one, which I think is just frizzled, didn't like it at all. And quite a lot of the plants, I think we overwintered a lot of pansies, which seem to do really, really well, and some pots have managed to survive the sort of strong sunshine, and others have just given up the ghost and dried out to nothingness. So it's amazing what's happening, and it kind of brings me to one of the other things, which is we're on the edge of a drought, according to the water supply industry. So there are four stages of drought, and demands a response from UK authorities. So the prolonged dry weather drought, severe drought, and recovering from drought. And it's up to the four nations environment agencies to say whether an area is in drought and what level applies to them. There's no single definition, but instead the regulators monitor a number of factors, including rainfall, river flow, groundwater levels, and reservoir storage. Well, I mean, many reports sort of locally that reservoirs are down to possibly 30-40% of what they should be. Which doesn't bode well if we get a continuation of the warm weather, which apparently we're still going to get in the next week or so. So it's really, I think, one of those things again. A lot of blame is being thrown at the water companies, saying that I think there are two major sort of reservoirs planned that haven't really got off the ground yet. Really looking at ways to store rainwater, and I think that it's a great pastime if you want to go out into Derbyshire to Lady Bower as things dry out, to wait and see if the old village that was drowned appears again from the waters.
We went there in the 90s, I think, and you could walk across.
We did.
You could, yes, yeah. I went out there and saw it as well. So I think it's one of those things that we've got to be aware of. We've apparently had only about a third of the amount of rain expected during this spring, according to the Met Office, and parts of the country, including London, Hampshire and Yorkshire, went more than 3 weeks without a drop of rain. So the UK is not in drought yet, but there's a medium risk warning about drought. And they're saying basically it's causing them to look again at the infrastructure. And they're potentially trying to create a network. So I think that there are some north-south pipelines. And London obviously is a massive consumer of water. And that's where two of these major reservoirs, I think, are going to be in Lincolnshire, but to feed water down a pipeline towards London. So it's a difficult time when we're sort of running dry.
Well, it is, but, you know, some people have been saying we should have been talking about more reservoirs ages ago, like all these things.
Well, I think we were, and that's one of the things with this, that basically it's like a lot of things, you know. I mean, we've relied on Bazalgette's the sewer system for so many years now, and it's over 100 years of sort of Victorian sewage control and plumbing that we relied on. Well, yes, they've just had a major sewer again in London, but part of the boosted housing is opening up lots of problems in areas where they're already over capacity for the sewage treatment that's available. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's got to be an infrastructure plan, and that's got to find how we fund and develop such things.
Yeah, it's interesting because the south-east London, around there, the population is so great and the demand for water is so, therefore, much higher, isn't it?
Yes, it's, I forget what it's percentage-wise, 45%.
It's a lot. So they suffer generally worse, don't they, because there is such a high demand for water.
Well, they do, but also, you know, there are sort of places that are off track. And we said, you know, in previous programmes that people's own personal sort of catchment of water has been affected a lot by the fashions that are around for having, you know, very sort of hard paved areas for you to park your car on around the house, and turning your garden into something that's more of a sort of built structure than a garden.
Well, indeed.
So it's one of those things, you know. Sometimes what you fancy on the day can turn out to get something that you weren't really expecting.
Well, on that note, Paul, I don't know if you picked up Sheffield City Council's consulting on its local plan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think, yeah. Yes, it's an interesting one. And the reason I mention it in relation to what you're talking about is because part of the council's legal duty is to have a plan for the whole of its area for how land use will be designated and used for in the future. Some are brownfield sites which have been built on before. Some are greenbelt sites. Some places are designated for industry and commercial. Obviously, the big controversy at the minute is the amount of greenbelt land that's been designated for housing, particularly in the north of Sheffield. Now, people are on about transport implications of that, which is a really key issue. But also, what comes with all those houses, you are building, you know, you're turning green land or soil into hard ground, aren't you, really, on the main part? And where are people going to get, you know, where there's a sewage going to go? And that's more demand on the rain and reservoirs that we've got that are existing.
Well, again, it's one of the things which seems to have been let slip with developers over quite a long period, that they pay lip service to putting in the sewage handling. But quite often, they'll have a new development, which at some point joins the existing sewage network. So, you're still contributing to a main sewage problem because there's not a local sort of handling position for it. And again, the demand for water. You've got to have a look and say Lady Bower was flooded. Manchester's got several massive reservoirs that go further up into Peak District and beyond. And they're needed for the variable demand that's made by the big cities and big urban areas. So the more that we're pushing these new developments out into urban grass belt sort of areas, the more they've got to be made to have sufficient provision for those kind of things, let alone all the other issues that come about, things like doctors, dentists, and all of those support things, shops, all of that into the new areas. So I think that's the idea of a plan, and I think, sadly, Sheffield were way overdue for their plan being updated.
Oh, definitely.
So I remember I read the plan, I think it was 11 years ago.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. It's a political issue, of course.
Yeah, and I sort of read it and thought, yeah, okay, you're asking a lot of questions, but there's not a lot of answers, because I remember in that one, transport was one of the big issues, which we seem to be nibbling at the edges of now since we've got a Yorkshire mayor. Obviously, that's affected the tram system and the buses system and potentially other areas of development. But it's a connected society and world that we live in, so we've got to be aware of that. And I'll probably start off on a quick one, which is a place that I used to go past just outside Nottingham was a big power station, which has been sort of taken out of commission, moved over to, I think, wood pellet, and that became controversial. But it's now going to be potentially the site of a nuclear fusion power generation, offering the holy grail for cheap low-carbon power. There's a prototype reactor in design that aims to replicate the advances that started at the dawn of the nuclear age, which would be fusion as opposed to the fission, which was what happened in the early days. So nuclear fission, obviously we made bombs and wonderful things like that. But we did manage to make some nuclear power generators. And this new style is going to produce an energy output millions of times more than the old fossil fuel burning power station. So it's at least something is coming into plans. I think there is an urgency for UK power to have that sort of backlog, that backstop, of power generation for the periods where we can't rely completely on wind and solar generated power. And again, I think we talked about in the past, there have been moves several times to move into small, localised nuclear power stations rather than the sort of limited number of large power stations that we've got. And of those, a lot of those are getting towards the end of their real sort of operational life. And the problems that they've got at places like Sellafield is the byproduct, nuclear waste, and handling that, storing that, working out what to do with that, because it's a real, very long-term problem. So,
all interesting stuff, Paul, eh?
Yeah, so I talk about happy stuff.
And on the note of the local plan, Sheffield City Council's consultation on the local plan is open until the 11th of July 2025.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, we're in a democracy. Stand up and let your voice be heard.
Indeed. So anybody can contribute. And they're saying, you know, they are going to be building, they have got sites designated for housing on Greenbelt, but they're trying to say it's only a small percentage.
Well, we've got a growing population. We've got to
indeed
put them somewhere.
Exactly. And, it's fair play. Okay, brilliant stuff, Paul. All being well, we'll speak to you Monday. Glory Days Rock
Thank
Show,
you,
1 till 3.
I look forward to
bye-bye,
it.
Bye-bye, Paul. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Such a drag to want something sometime. One thing leads to another, I know. Was a time I wanted you for mine. Nobody knew. You arrived like a day, passed like a cloud. I made a wish, I said it out loud. Out loud in a crowd. Everybody heard. Talk a good time. It's not my place to know what you feel. I'd like to know, but why should I? Who are you then? Who are you now? Well, common labor by night, you find a highbrow. Back in my room, I wonder that I sit on the bed, look at the sky. Up in the sky, how do you bathe like the talk of the town? Maybe tomorrow, maybe someday. Maybe tomorrow, maybe someday. Place in this world, you've changed your place in this world. Oh, but it's hard to live by the rules. I never could and still never do. The rules and such never bothered you. You call the shots and they follow. You steal from a distance and go back to my room. You'll never know. I want you, I want you, but now it's the talk of the town. Maybe tomorrow, maybe someday. World. You've changed your place in this world.
Ooh, bit of Pretenders there. Talk of the town, RPG was talking about all sorts, including, well, I was really, Sheffield's local plan consultation, which is open. Get on the website, sheffield.gov.uk, and have your say on the new plans for land use in Sheffield. So, basically, you listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. We should have Phil Muffett on the line. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Now, you're tired, aren't you? Admit it.
I'm a bit tired today.
After that superb run you did the other week. Didn't you win something?
I was 2 minutes off my personal best. I've been aiming to get under 1 hour 10K run. I'm not quite.
Oh, Phil.
Not quite there.
But now, yeah, put your feet up now for a bit and you can chat to us instead and have a nice rest. So first, before we start, because you're going to talk about your beloved telescope and the journey you've had with it so far. I'm sure the journey has not ended. But tell us about Manvers Waterfront Boat Club and what's happening tomorrow.
Okay, so I'm part of Manva's Dragon Boat team, and my son and wife are also in it as well. Now we've done the run this morning. We're doing a cleaning a boat out because we've got a new second hand boat that needs a seat fixing, and it needs a good scrub down as well. So that's today's task. And then tomorrow there's the Sheffield Children's Hospital Charity Dragon Boat Racing on the lake tomorrow. Starts at 10 o'clock and it'll probably go through to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There's six teams involved, so it'll two boats racing at a time, and it's like a knockout competition. So that should be an interesting event tomorrow, and I'm doing some safety cover on that tomorrow. My son's
You're qualified, aren't you now? Official.
Yes, Royal Yacht Association.
Ooh, getting you. We're jealous, aren't we? But tell us, how did this come about with Sheffield Children's Hospital, out of interest?
Well, they do quite a bit of charity work. It's like a year later, they do a yearly charity event. So that's what they're doing tomorrow.
Amazing. So is that a public event then? People can just turn up and support?
Yes, there'll be loads of people here tomorrow.
So if you're interested, it's Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, which is... It's mwbc.org.uk.
I'm glad you know.
Well, I do. hey, and the weather, fingers crossed, will be all right.
Hopefully. Well, this morning it's been a tough run because it has been absolutely blistering. It doesn't look sunny, but an 8 mile run in this weather, I'm roasting.
Have you had a have you had a sausage sandwich yet? That's the main thing.
I've had a bacon sandwich.
Have you? You must be feeling better now then.
Ooh, I'm recovering.
This week's your Astro Clinic, Phil, and I just thought I'm going to ask you, because every time you come on, you talk, you can't help but talk about your telescope and how things have progressed, and how you've bought this and you've bought that, and you put some photographs up, I think, on the Mexman Swinson Astronomical Society Facebook page, I think, saying look, or you put them on your own page saying, oh, look at the difference between the photographs I took last year and the photographs I took this year. So tell us about the journey with your telescope.
So I've been doing iPhone photography for the past few years, and I've come on quite a long way with the iPhone, and I've more or less got as good as I can get with the iPhone. I think I can still squeeze a little bit out of it. I've moved on to the iPhone 14 Plus, I think it's now. And the last one was the 12 Pro, and you can get some really good pictures through your eyepiece. You need a bracket to fasten it to your eyepiece, so you've got a nice steady picture, and I can get up to a 30-second exposure with the basic gear you can get off apps online for your phone. But your chip, your camera chip in the iPhone is only so good and so big. So what I'm trying to do now is, as well as keep on doing this, I keep pushing back the boundaries. I've got a DSLR camera. So I've got my wife's cast off and a modified camera from one of our members, Tony Morris, who's a really good photographer. He's got a D350, which is quite old. I think it's a 2005 camera. So he's took the filter out, so it's more natural light. Because when we're doing astronomy, we want the natural colours, not the false colours we'd look at for your holiday photos. So it's slightly modified. So on my telescope, on my 8-inch reflector, I've got a 2-inch aperture for the eyepiece. So that really works well with the DSLR cameras, or the Canon, because it's the same aperture.
You know
your lens.
Yeah.
About 2 inches. So I've got an adapter, so that bolts into the eyepiece. So, and then I can get an image at prime focus. So basically, your telescope, just a massive telephoto lens. And because I've got a mount now that drives, I can actually track stars across the sky and do long exposures. However, living in Swinton and the light pollution that we have, which is an ongoing problem, I can actually get some really, really faint. I'm getting fainter stars with the camera, shorter exposures, but I'm getting quite a lot of back glow. So the kind of glow in the sky kind of cancels out the kind of images you're trying to photograph. So stars are really good. I can get really, really faint stars, down to 15 magnitude. But the nebula, because the kind of, how can I put it, the null point source light, it's kind of, you know, it's nebulous, it's fainter. So if you get any back glow in the sky, it kind of cancels it out. So anyway, one of the things I found is I've done a dark image through my telescope with the lens cover on, so it should technically be black. But when you actually do an 8 to 4 second exposure into your telescope, I've got light in my tube. So one of the things is with reflectors, the back end of the telescope is open to the air. Now, what I think's happening is light's coming in around the back of the mirror and bouncing up the tube. So what happens is if you turn the kitchen light on or the street light, if it gets anywhere near the back of your telescope, there's light bouncing into your system. So I'm getting some back glow from lighting around me.
So you mean it's not the street lights then?
Well, yes, but it's coming in from the back end as well as the front end. So what I've done is I've got a piece of cardboard, cut it to the diameter of the back of the telescope and slotted it in to try and cut out all the light coming from the back end of the telescope. Well, that's made quite a dramatic difference to the overall image. So I was getting a lot of light pollution coming in the back end of the telescope as well as the front end of the telescope. Now, if you've got a refractor, that won't happen because you're only getting light in the front and your eyepiece is at the back. But with a reflector, the light goes down to the bottom of the tube, bounces up the tube, and then comes out the side.
So
light can get in at both ends.
Yeah, so what you're saying, Phil, is you need a refractor.
Well, I've got a refractor as well, but the thing is, the large reflectors are better at collecting light. So really, big refractors are good for planetary stuff and the moon, whereas your reflectors, your big reflectors are better for taking in more light and seeing darker, fainter stuff.
Oh, it's a fine line then, isn't it?
Yeah,
between
it is,
what
it
you
is,
want to get, is. But
the mechanics, yeah, in the optics work differently.
So, can you just before we go on, if it, tell us what you talked about stars, and you can get 15 to 15 magnitude, so that's quite easy. But you said nebula is really difficult because it's nebulous.
The problem is you want longer exposures with nebula. But the problem is, so if I set my ISO, my film speed, to about 800, which in photography terms, when you're talking like emulsion and slides, I mean, 400 was a fast film. 800 was like really expensive and difficult to get hold of. But I mean, the ISO on films now on digital cameras, I think you can get something like 64,000, which is really fast.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can do 1600 or 1600 ISO, I can do 32,000 ISO, which is a lot faster. So the actual digital cameras, the DSLRs, are really, really good for photography. So the what I'm starting to do now is get clearer pictures of fainter things, but I've also got on a bigger format.
Right,
And the other thing is that now then I can download, I can plug my camera in to my laptop and download the image straight from through the camera onto my laptop, and I can process it on the laptop, which is the next stage to filter rubbish out and clean things up. But I've also found I've got an adapter I can plug into my Canon camera and plug it into my phone, and I can download the pictures now from my phone, from the camera, straight into my phone, and I can do basic photo editing on my iPhone now as well. But the iPhone edit suite's not as good as the computer edit suite. There's things like Cyril and Photoshop and a few other PixInsight, which you can get for your laptop, which are designed for editing astrophotography. So what you can do is you can get rid of a lot of the background noise so you can get brighter images. But that's kind of the next year down the line.
This is a long-term mission, isn't it?
It is. So the aim is to get brighter, better faint objects. That's the aim.
So that's what you're after. The hard to see things. You want better pictures to as a record that you've seen them, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing is if you get comets or, I don't know, supernova or things happen in the sky, you want to be able to pick it up without. You want to hone your skills so you can do these things when you need to do them.
Yeah. So you've been quite genuine. You got this telescope, I recall, for a rather significant birthday, I think.
Yes.
So how long ago? That's about just over a year, is it?
It's over, just over a year now, yes. I've come quite a long way.
You've come quite a long way. It's almost like it is a journey, a personal journey. You're obviously going down the photography route.
Yes. The problem is visual astronomy from home is difficult because your eyes are only going to see so much no matter what you do. Now, you can tweak your telescope to get a better image, but at the end of the day, if you're living in an urban environment, your eyes are only going to pick up so much light.
Yes.
Whereas your cameras, you can pick up stuff you can't see. I've seen a couple of galaxies over the past month, the Sombrero Galaxy in Virgo. I've never seen that with my eyes. I picked it up first time 2 weeks ago. And I couldn't see where it was, so I used Spiker, which is the brightest star in Virgo, and 45 minutes west of Spiker is a galaxy on the same latitude. So what I did is I found the star, which is called Spiker, which is Alpha Virgo. Focused it, so there's a technique for focusing as well. So I've got what's called a Bartonov mask. It's like the light slits in a screen that you put over the front of your telescope, and then you get like lines across the sky, across the star, and then you have to focus it so all the lines meet in the same center of the star. Take that off, and then basically you travel across the sky, 45 minutes in right ascension, and that's where it should be. Well, I couldn't see what I was looking for. Do a 5-second exposure, and this galaxy popped up on the camera. So, it's really good stuff.
Wow.
So, there's no way I could see it. I just could not see it at all.
So it's opened up a whole new world then, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm starting to see stuff. I mean, you can go to the observatory, and we have observing events and stuff like that, but there's nothing quite like having your own gear at home.
No, so obviously for people who are listening, that's the Huber Observatory. It's near Huber Stand, isn't it? It's the Jones Observatory, as built by you lot, as you told us a while back.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. At the moment, we're just putting a disabled level landing onto the observatory.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had a bit of a slope up to the front door to start with, but what we've decided to do is, we've talked about it for a couple of years. We're putting a level landing in, and there's a parking. We've had a disabled parking space, but it's like you've got to get across the grass from your car to the front. Well, now we've put a new landing in, and we're putting a ramp across the grass so you can get from a car into the observatory. So
brilliant.
We've got a disabled toilet already. We did that with the last project, so we're just making it.
How do you fund all this then? Is that just from the subscriptions?
Well, we're getting a grant for this.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So we've got a small, one of our members got us £1,000.
Brilliant.
So we've spent £400 already. So we've got a bit more to spend, But we'll be spending it on upgrading stuff.
All you need now is to get Rotherham Council to sort the street lighting out.
Yeah.
And because it's setting a lot of astronomers in Mexford and Swinton, isn't it?
Out the council, our cesspool we have for the toilets, £160 to have it emptied. So it lasts us about a year and a bit. Well, it's gone up from £160 to £260. So it's gone up a considerable, I mean, what's that, 40-45%, is it?
I'm not something sure like
what percentage
that.
It is. It's gone up a huge amount in 1 year.
Blimey. So what's the justification for that then?
Well, I think local authorities are strapped for money, to be honest, but it's a huge amount of money to jump from 1 year to the next.
Yeah, yeah. Mm, interesting.
But anyway, it all costs money. I mean, it costs a couple of grand a year to keep the observatory running. But, I mean, we've got subscriptions that people pay. £96 for the year. But to be honest, it's cheaper than being in Girl Guides.
Yeah. Do you know?
My niece is in the Girl Guide. I think they have to pay £2 a week to go to the Girl Guides. Our club works out at less than £2 a week.
Well, it's an absolute bargain. And you've got a great website as well. And you do Facebook and you do all your public outreach, which are often free, aren't they? You're for a small charge. It's nothing, is it?
Yes. So
amazing. Yeah. Going back to when you talked about finding this sombrero galaxy, you talked about you used Spiker to get you there. You talked. You looked 45 minutes west. And do you mean 45 degrees, as in, or do you literally mean?
No, there's 4 minutes in a degree. So when we're using setting circles, you tend to use a declination. The vertical axis is in degrees, but the horizontal increments are in minutes, well, seconds, minutes, and hours. So you've got 24 hours in a circle. And then you break your
yeah, I thought I'd get the bit of maths in there because I knew I knew from...
So 1 degree at the equator one degree is 4 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Brilliant. Oh, are you clever?
So it's just on the horizontal axis on the telescope, it will not say it in degrees; it will say it in hours and minutes.
You should have been a science teacher, you know. You see, astronomy takes you everywhere. It's maths, isn't it? A lot of it is maths.
It does. Well, the other day when we were doing some concreting, landing in, I remember Tony said, who would have thought like being an astronomer makes you end up doing shuttering and concreting? And the thing is, this is the thing about astronomy. People think you're just looking at stars and planets. That is the pinnacle of what you do. It's all the infrastructure and other stuff you need to learn and do and know what you're doing to get to that point where you can go out for an hour in an evening and find something and look at something you want to have a look at. But there's a lot of work goes into it before that.
Yeah, to being able to find out what you're looking at. Yeah. So, you know, your journey with your telescope, in all honesty, if you were starting again and you were about to get that telescope, would you have changed anything? Because you've progressed such a lot, haven't you? It's been a massive learning curve. Would you?
Yeah, I'd probably have a bigger refractor. The reflector I've got is an 8-inch f4, so it's a short focal length reflector. So it does photography quickly, which is what I wanted. But the refractor, if I was to get that again, I'd get one with a bigger diameter, something like 100 millimeters. The one I've got 72. Which is really good, to be honest. I've got a CCD camera in it, and I'm doing lunar images with that camera on that telescope. And to be honest, it's really, really good. So the only thing I would do is probably get a bigger refractor. But the problem is, when you get big refractors, they get longer and longer and longer. So there's always a trade-off between what you're getting. The thing is, with reflector, it's quite big and heavy. And if I was to get a 10-inch, which one of our members has got, it's better at resolving images and it's faster in the fact that it collects more light quicker, but it's a lot heavier and a lot more bulkier. So it's like horses for courses, and it depends what you want to do.
Well, yeah,
another thing, it's heavy. And the other thing is, the bigger telescopes you have, the bigger mounts and the stronger drives you need as well. So there's practicalities. And the other thing is, it's an absolute waste of time having a massive telescope in your back garden, because all you're doing is collecting more street lighting.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I'm trying to find ways of getting rid of the street lights.
you could save Rotherham some money.
Why
Rotherham Council? I tell you what, you could say, look, you just turn these few light bulbs off.
Lighting. Yeah. After 11 o'clock, we should turn street lighting off.
Yeah, get them written to, get them sorted out. Phil for Mayor of Rotherham. That's what I say. It'll sort it out if you tell them to. We're going to have to let you go now, Phil. We could talk for hours.
I'm going to go back to cleaning my Dragon Boat.
You are, but all the best for tomorrow. Dragon Boat team, six teams knockout at Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, eh?
See you next week.
Yeah, you're going to be doing your Eye on the Sky next week, aren't you? Great stuff, Phil.
Have a nice week.
Bye-bye, you too. Bye.
Thank you, Phil.
I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, 'cause there's magic in my eyes.
I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play, and never see you when deliberately you put things in my way, well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. A surprise. I know that you have, 'cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. The Eiffel Tower and the Taj Mahal might see on clear days. You thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna need that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles.